Many people like to think that their lives can make a difference in the world. And for the Christian, this is not only a good thing to hope, but a reasonable expectation. Jesus tells us that if we abide in Him, we will bear much fruit. And surely within this much fruit is the transformation and enhancement of the lives of some of those with whom we will interact as we make our way through this world. For most of us, however, that difference, although incredibly powerful and dynamic in specific individual lives, is not something readily apparent on a larger worldwide scale. We make a difference in our world, but not so much in the world. At that great day of judgment, there may be 5 or 10 or 20 people who stand up and testify that our presence in their lives made a major impact for good. But it probably won't be thousands, hundreds of thousands, or millions. In the case of Wilberforce, however, there will surely be millions of men and women who will gladly testify that his life was, by the grace of God, a huge blessing to them. He didn't just change his own little world. He was used by God to transform the world. Wilberforce was born in England in 1759 and died at the age of 73. He was not a preacher. He was not an evangelist. He was not an inventor. William Wilberforce was a British politician, serving over 50 years as a member of Parliament in the House of Commons. But in his own mind, even though he was continually up to his neck in political causes and deliberations, he was first and foremost a Christian. While today many people believe that politics and Christianity don't really mix, Wilberforce saw himself as a representative of Jesus Christ in British politics. Although he was involved in many noble causes, he is known today primarily for one thing: his tireless efforts to bring the British slave trade to an end. In his excellent biography of Wilberforce, Eric Metaxas writes this: "Wilberforce saw the idea that all men and women are created equal by God, in His image, and are therefore sacred. He saw the idea that all men are brothers, and that we are all our brother's keepers. Wilberforce's first great object was the abolition of the slave trade, but his second great object, one might say, was the abolition of every lesser social ill. The issues of child labor and factory conditions, the problems of orphans and widows, of prisoners and the sick, all suddenly had champions in people who wanted to help those less fortunate than themselves. Taken together, it's difficult to escape the verdict that William Wilberforce was simply the greatest social reformer in the history of the world. The world he was born into in 1759 and the world that he departed in 1833 were as different as lead and gold. Wilberforce presided over a social earthquake that rearranged the continents and whose magnitude we're only now beginning to fully appreciate." Before we look further into the great man's accomplishments, let's consider his beginnings. William Wilberforce was born into privilege. His father was a prosperous British merchant, in fact very, very prosperous. By today's standards, the Wilberforce family were millionaires many times over. His parents were not strong Christians, however. In fact, they were not Christians at all. Although they held lightly to the Church of England, they had little use for the genuine believers in those days, the despised Methodists and nonconformists, who were derisively labeled enthusiasts. As a child, young William was tiny, which was indeed true throughout his life. His height as an adult was 5'3" at its peak. But due to a curvature of the spine in his older years, he probably stood around 5 feet. He was a sickly boy with stomach problems, which would plague him all his life. He also had very poor eyesight. With such liabilities, one might assume that this unfortunate little boy would end up on the fringes of society, with few friends and little influence upon anyone. In fact, the very opposite was true. Although not at all impressive in stature, William Wilberforce was extremely impressive in that area which transcends size, looks, and strength. The boy, as well as the man, had an amazing, attractive, charismatic personality. His enthusiasm for life, his affectionate nature, his genuine concern for the well-being of others, his acute sense of humor, and his delight in social interactions took him far beyond his physical limitations. William was, from birth to death, a people person. He liked people, and people liked him. He was also incredibly gifted in mental facilities and in voice, speech, and writing. Despite his small size, he was impossible to ignore. In addition to all this, Wilberforce had a beautiful singing and speaking voice, which made him pleasant to listen to, even if you didn't care a thing for what he was saying. It seems that God, knowing the important role he had in mind for William in demolishing slavery in the British Empire and promoting the cause of Jesus Christ, fashioned for himself a nearly perfect instrument toward that end. But the Creator of all things not only shaped Wilberforce through genetics, he also intervened into his environment as he grew from a boy to a man. Wilberforce might have never considered the claims of Jesus Christ had he grown up under the agnostic, secular, materialistic atmosphere embraced by his mother and father. They had virtually no use for anyone or any system that took the words of the gospel seriously and literally. But the gracious hand of God intervened in the life of little William in a way which ensured that he would be able to get a close-up view of true Christianity. The catalyst that set all of this in motion was family tragedy. Within a short space of time, William's oldest sister died, and then his father. Soon afterwards, his mother fell terribly sick. Deciding that she could no longer care for William, she sent him to live with his Uncle William and Aunt Hannah. Young William's entire world was turned upside down. It must have been heart-wrenching for the sensitive child, but in fact it resulted in powerful Christian foundations to be laid in his life. For his uncle and aunt were everything that his parents were not. They were born-again, evangelical, passionate, thoughtful, serious, Bible-reading, praying Christians. For the first time in his life, William got to see, close up and personal, what real Christianity looked like. Eric Metaxas writes, Wilberforce's aunt and uncle were at the epicenter of a spiritual renaissance in England at that time. They were close friends with one of the greatest figures of the 18th century, George Whitefield, the principal human force behind the social earthquake known as the Great Awakening. Young William took to this immersion in red-hot Christianity easily and naturally. He soon was attending church, praying, and embracing Jesus Christ as his Savior. He even became acquainted with one of the most famous British evangelicals of that time, John Newton, who penned the most popular hymn in the history of Christianity, Amazing Grace. Newton had been a slave ship captain who grew to hate slavery and everything connected with it. Seeds were being planted in the mind and heart of Wilberforce, which would eventually produce a raging inferno of enmity towards slavery and the slave trade, springing from a Christ-centered perspective. After a lengthy convalescence, William's mother regained her health. In time, she came to recognize that her young son had become an evangelical, which in her mind was about as bad as a Satan worshiper. Her boy was being brainwashed and was turning into one of the dreaded enthusiasts. It took a couple of years for her to see what was happening, and by that time, William had imbibed a great big dose of real Christianity. She came to get her son and brought him home. In the ensuing years, she made sure to take him to all sorts of secular, worldly amusements and absolutely forbade him to attend evangelical churches. Her efforts appeared to work. As he grew to adulthood, William gradually lost his evangelical passion and beliefs, and became the proper secular son for which his mother fervently hoped. With his brilliant mind and financial means, William was able to attend Cambridge, but by this time he had turned into a party boy and did not take his studies seriously. He was smart enough to get decent but not outstanding grades. However, his great love was to stay up late at night with friends, eating, drinking, and singing. His charisma, natural charm, and beautiful singing voice made him the life of every party, and Wilberforce relished it. Although a tiny little fella, he was a big man on campus. Everybody enjoyed his company. Eventually, he developed close friendships with young men whose passion was to enter politics and become members of Parliament. Providentially, his best friend became William Pitt, a man who was a polar opposite of Wilberforce. Pitt was a serious student, shy and incredibly motivated. What the two did have in common were razor-sharp minds. They were both brilliant and would become two of the most famous British politicians in the history of the empire. Wilberforce decided to enter the world of politics. He was elected as a member of parliament at the youngest age possible, 21. Pitt was also elected, and the two friends' fellowship was transferred from the university halls to the House of Commons. At this point, Wilberforce was no Christian. He sometimes even mocked the evangelicals, ignoring the fact that two of the most beloved people in his life, his aunt and uncle, were devout Christians. But when it pleased God, who, as with the Apostle Paul, had separated him from his mother's womb, William was soon drawn back to the faith of his youth. It happened on a long journey to spend some time in the winter in France with his mother, his sister, and a cousin. In those days, travel was slow and boring, if you could avoid being robbed, and Wilberforce invited an acquaintance named Isaac Milner to travel with him in a second coach so that they could make the hours pass faster by enjoying intellectually stimulating conversation throughout the trip. Milner had once been Wilberforce's tutor and was one of Britain's leading intellectuals. He had a brilliant mind and could converse intelligently about every subject under the sun. Milner agreed to go with him, and the two riding together made quite an odd sight. Milner was a giant of a man, and Wilberforce's small size made him look more like a child than a man. Nevertheless, they were both highly intelligent, well-read, and enjoyed each other's company immensely. Their conversation ranged widely, and they both loved to joke and laugh. But things took a serious turn when Wilberforce made a chance comment mocking the evangelicals who took their religion so seriously. Milner, while not really qualifying as an evangelical, had a great respect for these people and replied that if Wilberforce ever really wanted to discuss Christianity in a more serious manner, he would be glad to oblige him. This shocked the 24-year-old MP, and soon the subject came up for real. On the return trip to London, they talked further and discussed a popular evangelical Christian book at length. It took a while, but these talks with Milner were used by God to make Jesus Christ attractive to young Wilberforce, and it was only a matter of time before he assented, first intellectually, and then in heart, to the doctrines of Scripture and to the Lordship of Jesus. The good-time party boy politician became a born-again Christian. William Wilberforce was a changed man. He resigned from the 5 eating and drinking clubs which he had attended continually, and now spent hours reading the Scriptures. Before, a political career seemed the best possible choice, but now, thoroughly enraptured with Jesus, he gave thought to chucking the whole thing and becoming a minister. Politics lost its charm for him. But before making a decision, he decided to visit that man whose acquaintance he first made as a youth, John Newton. By this time, John Newton was perhaps the most famous Christian in England apart from John Wesley. At the age of 60, Newton was the pastor of one of London's most important churches. Wilberforce went to Newton's house, but somehow lost his nerve to go in and see this venerable man of God. He circled around the house a couple of times and finally worked up the courage to knock on his door. He poured out his heart and shared his perplexity about whether to stay in Parliament or resign and become a minister.